You might have the big copy, but by God, I got the fancy one right here. I'm John Henry. I'm an alcoholic. Grace of God and help people in this program. I'm sober again today. Hadn't always been that way. December 25th, 1973, that was a Christmas day, and I woke up like I woke up most days, drunk again. I was laying on a pea-stained couch with a slouch hat and a slouch hat on my head, completely naked, and there was somebody in my front room that was wearing a suit. Now, in those days, if somebody was wearing a suit in my front room, it was either the Christians or the laws, and neither one of those were good news. So I woke up kind of slow, checking myself out. You know how you do? And I realized that I'd broken my arm again. It had been broken in 17 different places. I was on full-time disability income, Social Security. I'd been into some tough times. I'd had an altercation with gravity and lost. I believe the ticket said failure to negotiate the straightaway. I ran right smack dab into a tree. You know, when you're doing okay, then you're not doing okay. That was me. I'd been in a karate match. I'd been demonstrating karate the night before to the furniture. And it was furniture 15, me nothing. I'd broken that arm again. And this old man was sitting in my room, and he said, "Son, get up. It's Christmas Day." I recognized him for who he was, and it was L.E. Morgan. He was a deacon from the Church of Christ who'd had kind of a reputation in that part of the country. He was a wild, wild man in his youth, and he'd found Jesus Christ through the Church of Christ, and he'd gotten straight. Nobody that I hung around with wanted anything to do with him because he was still awfully tough. Standing behind him was his two sons. One was a running buddy of mine, and the other was a Marine drill sergeant. And they looked like raccoons. They were kind of sitting there all nervous and stuff. That old man said, "Get up. It's Christmas Day. We're giving, and son, you're getting." He was a Christian, so I thought I'd make him go away. I said, "Fuck you." And he looked at me with those steely blue eyes and said, "I don't think you understood what I said, boy." He said, "Get up." And he could have stood back with those two boys and they looked straight at me. Blood is thicker than water. So I cleaned myself as best I could. I looked in the mirror and it wasn't a pretty sight. I hadn't been bathing regularly. And that cast was laying there all tattered on my arm. And you know how a cast gets after about 9 months. I'd been meaning to do something about that. He said, "Get up and come with us. You're coming to Christmas dinner." And he said, "Leave that jug behind. We're a Church of Christ family. We don't drink." This was not good news. I'd run into a guy in a bar. I mean, where else do you run into people? About 9 months earlier. And he said he was a member of the ANAs. Alcoholics Anonymous. He was a member of the ANAs. And I didn't know what the ANAs were. And I decided I wanted to impress him because he'd walked into a bar and met me. And I wanted to, he went next door to a house, which was unusual for my friends. And I could, you know, when I see you and you see me, we do that I know you're a drunk. I walk into a Baptist convention. I walk right up to the guy with a reefer and say, "How you doing?" I mean, I've never missed a day in my life. And this guy, when I looked at him, I knew he was a wino same as me. So when he said, "Let's go next door," I said to the bartender, I said, "Put it on my tab." My tab was always good. I might be 6 years behind on my child support, but by God, my tab is current. And I'm proud of that. Put it on my tab. I said, "Let make it a pint of Mad Dog 2020. I wanted to impress him. And I put it in this old Mackinac coat. I was old wool coat I was wearing. It had a pocket in the front. And when you put it in the front, people wouldn't look for that jug, you know. I carried it in front. Went next door and we got to playing some music. I'd been a musician most of my life, but my arm had been broken tragically while trying to negotiate the straightaway. And I was down to just a harmonica. That's all I owned. The guitar I'd use as a weapon. And this guy, he walked into his house. I was so sure he was a wino. You know what I mean? And when he went up to his house and I saw his car and he had a brand new K5 Blazer and he had a truck with his name on the side of it. It said Gordon's Construction Company. I said, "Shit, he's got a job." I said, shit, he's got a car. And we walked up and said, shit, he's got a home. And I walked inside that little old place and he was drinking. He was brewing some coffee. I should have known. I should have been tipped off and left. But he was brewing some coffee. He was playing some bluegrass music. And there was a banjo in the corner. Oh, man, it was a pretty banjo. And a dub guitar in the other corner. Oh, God, that was a pretty guitar. And he had a Girard turntable. I'm aging myself. He had a Girard turntable. He's playing this bluegrass, you know. And it sounded to me like a party. Don't we love a party? Don't we love a party? And I did want to impress him. So we sat down and he grabbed that banjo. God, he knew how to play. He knew how to play. He made that thing ring. And he knew how to sing. We started singing. I played some harmonica and he played some banjo. And the timing was right. You know, a good drunk is all about timing. Isn't it? Isn't it about timing? It's all about timing. And that record kind of died down. He put that banjo away. And I thought, now we'll start telling some stories. So he started. And I topped him. And then he topped me, and I topped him. You know how drunks get going? And I start talking about jail, so he starts talking about jail. I start talking about ex-wives, he starts talking about ex-wives. I start talking about failure, he starts talking about failure. You know what? He knew what he was talking about. This guy, like me, was a freaking loser. But man, look what's around him. He's a loser like me. But look what's around him. His way of life. He must have broken the code. And I wanted to know about this power that he had. So I pulled out that bottle and I snapped open the top. It was a pint, so I threw the top away. And I handed it to him. And he changed my life. He said, no, thank you. And I said, what the, you mean no, thank you? He said, well, when I drink, I get drunk. I said, yeah. And he says, well, when I get drunk, I get in trouble sometimes. Hear me? Sometimes. He said, sometimes. Now, I get in trouble sometimes, too. Remember, we deal with alcohol. It's cunning. It's baffling. It's powerful. I get in trouble sometimes. Sometimes I sit down, I drink a drink, go home with my wife. What a wonderful thing. Sometimes I sit down, take a drink, go home with your wife. What a terrible thing. I get in trouble sometimes, too. And I said, yeah. Then he said something that changed my life. He said, I'm alcoholic. And I thought, why, you poor, pitiful some bitch. Yeah. I thought to myself, you know, if I ever get that bad, maybe I'll do something. But it changed my life because he said he was alcoholic. He said he was alcoholic. And look at the life he had. Aren't we copycats? Aren't winos copycats? I like you. I'm going to get a black t-shirt as soon as I leave here. Uh-huh. I want to copy the people I'm like. I walk like Danny about half the time. I laugh like you, and I just met you. You know, I mean, alcoholics, we ape and we copy, we ape and we copy. So I walked around town calling myself an alcoholic. I figured I'd get a banjo, a girlfriend, a car, you know. So I hadn't had a car in several years. I went around like this back. This is back in the 70s, you understand. I went around like this, and everybody knew me there. It was a Port Madison Indian Reservation, so the tribal cops used to pick me up and drive me around. I was vying for the position of town drunk. Yeah. The competition was fierce there on the Indian Reservation, but I was doing pretty good. They'd drive me around. And I'd go into taverns, you know, either three or four. There was a Hilltopper, and there was Bud's, and there was Ken's, and there was the Wigwam. And they'd throw me out of one, and I'd go to another. They'd throw me out of another. I'd go, you know, I had this thing. I knew my taverns. And I'd go into the Tip Top, which was, it was up on the top of the hill, a little outside of my territory. And I'd walk in, I'd say, give me a drink. I'm alcoholic. And they say, yeah, you are. And I thought, what the hell? I was a little bit tight, a little bit tense about that. I thought I was the one that knew I was alcoholic. I found out that was no secret to anybody except for me. I'm alcoholic. Yeah, you are. Wait a minute. I remember one time there was this lady bartender, and I said, well, we're going to hit it off, me and her. I said, I'm alcoholic. She said, yeah, me too. I thought, yeah, you know, we've got this common thing going on. She said, you ever taken that 44 question thing? I said, oh, yeah, I've taken it many times. I didn't know what the hell she was talking about. She said, you know, when it says if you drink when you're sad, I went, check. When you drink when you're alone, I went, check. She said, when you drink when you're happy, I went, check. You gulp drinks, I went, check. Isn't it funny how if you get three right, you're alcoholic? I thought, shit, I hope she asked that again. How does that go? Start at the top. You know, I want to cheat on this examination. The first step in the program called Alcoholics Anonymous has been given to me by this man named Gordon B. It was closing in on me. It was closing in on me. It was closing in on me. The step had been given to me. If you're new in this program, if this is your first time here, you've been given the first step of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's going to screw up your drinking something terrible. You may as well stay. This guy used to drop by my house. I mean, nobody dropped by my house. Trust me on this one. I mean, except the laws or eventually a person from the Church of Christ. More later. But he would drop by my house. He'd honk his horn and then that brand new K5 Blade. He said, come on, let's drive around. And I thought, wow, this balmy some bitch. You know what time it is? 10 o'clock in the morning. Way too early to be driving around. And I'd tell him, I'm going to drink this wine in your car. I'm going to smoke these cigarettes in your car. And he'd say, yeah, you are. Come on in this house. Come on in this car. What do they say at AA? Come on in this house. I'm sick. Come on in this house. I'm going to drink inside your club. Shit. Come on in this house. We've all seen it. He was driving around seeing me. What was he doing? That 12th step, he was bringing it to me. That first step had been delivered to me. And we would just drive around and he would just talk, just talk, just talk. He wasn't collecting heads. He wasn't asking for membership. We were just talking. I said, well, why don't you drink? A good question. And he said, well, times got bad. And I thought, yeah, that's when you start drinking. Yeah, you know, I mean, why would one stop then? That's still a little confounding to me. And he said things that changed my life. He said, well, I was no longer willing to pay the price of a drink. And I thought, yeah, man, I know what you're talking about. The price of a drink has nothing to do with $1.50 a shot. It has nothing to do with $5 a bottle. The price of a drink's huge for me, baby. When I look at that drink, I get in trouble sometimes. Uh-huh. I'm powerless over alcohol. My life has become unmanageable. When I take that drink, there is no telling where that's going to take me. No telling where that's going to take me. No matter how much tragedy I've had, even a week before, I can look at that drink and say, shit, that makes sense. Bam. No longer willing to pay the price, he said. I said, yeah. Yeah, I can understand what you're saying. You poor son of a gun. You're driving the car. You got the house. You got the redhead. You know, I'm thinking, why you poor son of a gun? If I ever get that bad, I might do something about it myself. December 24th, I started celebrating Christmas around August that year. And on the 24th, I'd been drinking since August, you know, and I was sitting down in a place called Bud's where they had a tab. And they said, and two friends of mine, you know the friends I'm talking about? They'll try to kill you, they're my friends. They'll try to kill you, they're my friends. The kind of friend that says, let's go take some, and they say, yeah. Let's go eat some, yeah. Let's go shoot some, yeah. Let's go smoke some, yeah. Let's go drink some, yeah. And they dropped by and picked me up, and I said, yeah. We went over to a place called the Marymount. Now, that was a cocktail lounge. I'm not much of a cocktail lounger. What's so funny? The bow tie, huh? I'm not much of a cocktail lounger. Every once in a while you go into a cocktail lounger, you run into a social drinker. Very unsettling, these people. Very unsettling. And I end up looking at their drink, wondering where the hell they went, you know? And it's like they went home. And I'm thinking, the bartender's coming. I'm thinking, shit, you know, that could be mine. I'm an economist, so I'm worrying about the waste that's going on there. They took me and they said, Merry Christmas. I said, yeah, it's wonderful. Goddamn wonderful here. I hated Christmas. God, I hated it. They said, well, we'll buy you two drinks of anything you can order. And I said, okay, give me a triple scotch of the Zombie Chaser. That's one. Well, back in those days, they'd bring you two of those flaming sons of bitches with a triple scotch, and I did it, and I slammed them back, and I slammed back another one. Now, I remember part of that evening. I remember kind of multiple parts of that evening. So I remember wiping off the table with my arm, and I remember a fist fight with somebody. I remember being thrown out and coming back in, and thrown out and coming back in, and I remember leaving, sort of. They dropped me off at this old shack I was living in. And for a Christmas gift, they gave me half a fifth of Jack Daniels. I'm powerless over alcohol. I'm powerless over alcohol. If I drink it, I'll die. So what am I going to do? I'm going to drink it. I can remember vaguely drinking that bottle. I can remember vaguely starting this old coal stove that I had in there. I didn't have any heat except for a coal stove. Cheap coal, too. I can remember that kind of hysteria that happens sometimes. I get in trouble sometimes. I get in trouble sometimes. Not all the time, but damn, I get in trouble sometimes. That night was one of those sometimes. I can remember flailing my arm against the furniture and weeping. I remember passing out and kicking out the stove. I didn't expect to wake up. And I did. With a deacon from the Church of Christ standing in my door. Of the two, I'd have rather committed suicide than been there that morning. Coal dust everywhere. He said, get up, we're going to Christmas dinner. We're a Church of Christ family. I'm giving, son. You're getting this way with me. I cleaned myself up. I looked in the mirror. It wasn't a pretty sight. And I kind of smelled myself and checked that arm. It was wobbling to my side. I wasn't going anywhere. And there were six good arms there. Trust me on that one. And I just kind of shuffled off like a little raccoon and kind of shuffled over to him. And I figured, well, hell, I'll just give myself up. And we drove over to the suburbs there on Bainbridge Island. We drove into this nice little ranch house. We went inside this house, and there's Mitch Miller on a jukebox, you know, rock the hand, da 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 da. All that's going on. They got Ma, Pa, Ted, and Sally, big old table, and they sat me down there, and they just went about that Christmas thing, you know. I felt so out of place. I felt like a wino bum in the middle of a Norman Rockwell print. I felt so off. It says in the big book, we suffer from a terrible sense of isolation. Well, no shit. I smell different than those people. But they didn't care. They prayed around. They passed that stuff around. They didn't sprinkle holy water on me. They just went about their Thanksgiving or Christmas. They went around. They gave me the turkey. They had some orange juice there, which is lucky because I kept on drinking the orange juice. We know now that that sugar helps a lot, don't we? Isn't that right? Uh-huh. These people that work with in the field know what a lot of sugar will do in the middle of those DTs. It keeps them down. And that was fortunate because I was starting to feel a little bit antsy. I was kind of feeling like I had places to go and things to do. But these are the friendliest damn people. They just kept on passing food, setting me down, passing food, setting me down, passing food. And I'm starting to jones. You know, that music's getting kind of interesting now. And them lights, them Christmas lights. Good God Almighty. I like them still. Well, they got through with dinner. I excused myself. I had people to see, things to do. And they said, no. We're opening gifts. I thought, no, we're not opening gifts. They said, yeah, we're opening gifts. They included me in this damn family. They brought me into this room. They sat me in a big easy chair in a huge family around. Must have been 150 people for all I knew. And it was one of those things where it was one gift, one person. Little girl goes, gets a gift, brings it to one person. Everybody stops. They open the damn gift. Everybody goes, yeah, cool, goddamn t-shirt. Honey, that's one. I'm sitting there looking at that tree thinking, this is kind of interesting. I got the sweats happening to me, you know. It's forever I'm sitting in this damn easy chair. One of these girls goes in, she picks up this little box. She looks at me. I thought, oh, shit. She smiles. Everybody looks at me. They're all smiling. She walks over to the little box and hands it to me. Whole wide world's looking at me. I open the ribbon, tear off from the paper, open up the box. It's a keychain. People, I didn't own a key. I didn't have a car to start or a lock to lock. What do you do? I said, keep the goddamn keychain? I don't believe so. I said, thank you. And I thought to myself, that's a shame. That's a shame. That's a shame. I was waiting for them to sprinkle holy water on me. You know, welcome me into the clan, bring me into the Church of Christ. They didn't want me in the Church of Christ. He put me in his car, drove me over to the shack, left me out, said, so long, boy. Boom, Christmas is over, you know. We're giving, you're getting, it's over, we're through. Boom, they take off. I was armed with two things. One, 12 hours of sobriety, and two, the word alcoholism. The first step in a program of Alcoholics Anonymous has been given to me. I didn't know what that step was. Didn't know what that step was. That night, sitting there in that house, there was a little bit of scotch left in the bottle. I said, I'm alcoholic. And something happened. One of the things that happened is I finished that bottle. What, scotch? Come on. That's like Jack Daniels and shit. I didn't get a lot of that. But the compulsion to drink was lifted from my life, though I didn't know it at the time. I had a reaction, and I slept. I oftentimes say that when God enters my life, I either weep or I sleep. That's been true in my life. There'll be times when I sleep, so if I fall over, just... Or I weep, and that happens sometimes too. But that night, I slept. Now, I don't know how many of you are speed freaks, but as for me, I had not slept in years. I had passed out for the longest, longest time. One of the greatest fears I had of not drinking was not sleeping. If I ain't drinking, I ain't sleeping. As far as I knew, that's the way it worked. You drink yourself asleep. That night, I slept. The next day, I woke up with a set of instructions. Don't ask me where I got them, because I'll tell you. But I knew that when I got up, I needed to go see Gordon B., the guy with the K5 blazer, who is a member of the A&A's. A or something. A&A. Anyway. Went to his house 3 miles. I've clocked it. 3 miles up. Put a sign on his door. Said, I think I have a drinking problem. I signed it so he'd know who it was. My arm's dangling at my side. It's broken. I turn around and walk back 3 miles the other way. I'm not much of a walker then. Trust me on that one. The best I did was horizontal. I wasn't much of that vertical stuff. I walked back and I sat on the couch. I don't know whether I sat on that couch for 3 minutes or 3 days. Those are my instructions. Go see Gordon. Sit your ass down. Those are still my instructions. Sit your ass down. Go to a meeting. Sit your ass down. Very simple. Very simple. Very effective. Was effective on that day. Because he came. He showed up. Gordon showed up. He showed up in that 1973 K5 Blazer with the top down. The sun was shining. The birds were singing. Swear to God it's so. Now, this was December in the state of Washington. I'm sticking to my story. We got inside that K5 Blazer. We headed on over to a place called the Fremont District in Seattle, Washington. It's underneath the bridge, the 45th Street Bridge. It was a part of town that I frequented on occasion. Now, it was a tough, tough part of town back then. Right now, you can't even afford to live there. But back then, trust me, it was a place that most people weren't comfortable. I was terribly comfortable. Up top of the Fremont, there was an old union hall, and there were 12 steps going up that union hall. And Gordon said, come on, follow me. And he headed up those steps. He said, step one, step two, step three, step four. Do you remember it? Been to the Fremont? Step five, step six, step seven. I thought, these crazy sons of bitches. Walked up to step 12, and I could smell the cigarettes, and I could smell the coffee, and I could hear the laughter. I could hear the laughter. What do I hear here? Laughter. Yeah, winos laughing. God, what a wonderful sound. Laughing. I don't mean hysteria now. I've been hysterical plenty of time. You know, you eat enough amphetamine, you smoke enough reefer, you drink enough wine, you're going to be laughing. But this was something different. This was something different. I thought, my God, I want this. Oh, I want this. If you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. And some of these we balked. God, I want this. And I stood at that door. I can remember looking down this long, long hall. And it was smoky. I know it was smoky. And a guy looked at me from across the hall and he smiled. He smiled. Mano y mano. He smiled. And he looked at me and he started coming at me. Back in those days, if you came at me, it was either about fornicating or fighting. And this man was not my style, so I just stood my ground. I said, I'm going to stand. I'm going to stand right here. I'm through. I had that old broken arm, that old slouch hat on and the Mackinac coat. And he came up and he held out his hand, and I took his hand, and he looked at me, he said, welcome. Come on in this house. I wanted him to know what the problem was. I wanted to know what he was getting himself into. I said, I'm alcoholic. And he looked at me, he said, hey, yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. Come on in this house. Come on in this house. Oh, God, that felt good. Come on in here. Come on in here. I want y'all, everybody here. I want y'all, when we're all sitting around our cliques, you know, guys and gals, and we're telling these stories about how good we're doing, how what a wonderful world is. We look up, there's this dirty old wino sitting at the door. Stop. Go grab that person and say, come on in this house. You understand what I'm saying? Come on in this house. I remember that man to this day. 31 years later, I remember that man to this day. Come on in this house. You know what they tell me when I come into AA? Come on in this house. Sit your ass down. I'm scared. Come on in this house. I can't pay my bills. Come on in this house. My wife has thrown me out again. Come on in this house. They had, well, this is pretty fancy. They are framed here. There they had their window shades. These things are window shades, you understand? You ever look up in your club and there's the little handle hanging down at the bottom? Those are window shades. I suspect that at some point, this is only a theory, this may not be true, but Danny suggests, he's repeated it time and time again. So it must be true. But I suspect at some point in time, many, 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 many years ago, some old wino went out and got drunk and he woke up and he saw in his checkbook, paid the order of window shades. And he said, shoot, what am I going to do with this? All my money, all I got is window shades. That's just a theory. I looked up there, you know. We sat around this table. We went around a table. And they said, I'm John Henry. I'm alcoholic. I wanted them to know. I said, I'm alcoholic. You know what they said? They said, oh, God, that sounds, it feels good today. It just felt wonderful then. It felt wonderful then. All my life, I've seen rules. I've been in psych wards. I've been in the military. I've been in jails. I've been in lockup, one kind or another. All my life, I've seen things on walls look just like that. Rule 1, rule 2, rule 3, rule 4, rule 5, rule 11, rule 12. And there are always rules on one side, and then there is what the deal is on the other. You understand what I'm saying? In a psych ward, the rules said, here's what you do. You get up, you make your bed, and you don't take any drugs. Those were only rules. In a psych ward, it took me a while to find out who had second all. That was the deal. Everybody in prison knows what Pruno is. Or they used to. They said, you don't drink in prison. Those were the rules. You found the guy with Pruno. That was the deal. So I looked at those rules, and I thought, well, that's the rules. And there were a bunch of guys sitting by the coffee pot, and I said, I bet they know the deal. So I went over to this guy that had a neat coat on. You know, that was important to me. So, because the guy with the neatest coat also knows the deal. So I went to this guy with the neatest coat, and I said, what's the deal here? And he looked at me and said, you mean here? I said, yeah, what's the deal here? He said, we don't drink. I said, well, how the hell do you not drink? And he says something very important to me. He said, one day at a time. One day at a time. I said, well, wait a minute. Let me work with this thing. You mean like this morning I didn't take a drink? He says, come on. And then I came on over here. He says, come on. And then we had that lunch. Yeah, come on. And I hung out at this club. Yeah. And then I went home and I slept. He said, yeah, that's one. And I said, the next day, he said, come on. I come on over here because I got that lunch. Yeah. They used to feed over the Fremont. You know, every wino in town was over there at noon. He said, come on. One day at a time. Stay sober for a day. It says, is that it? He said, for you, that's it. Because I had looked up at that thing and I had read that to myself. I said, we admitted we're powerless over alcohol. And I said, yes. No argument. That word was not wasted. Powerless was not wasted on me. I understand. When I drink, I take a drink. When I take a drink, it takes me. No question. Then there was a dash. It said that our lives had become unmanageable. I thought, no. Then it said, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I thought, that's a little harsh. Then it said, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care. Ooh. Made a search again. No. Admitted to, ooh. We're entirely ready to have, ow. Humbly asked, no. Now I looked at number 8 and made a list of all persons we had harmed, became willing to make amends to them all. I said, there'll never come a day like that. And then something about go right down to them. I said, oh, shit, no. I had sold bad drugs to the banditos. I was not going back to say I'm sorry. But that number 12 was kind of enticing to me. It said, having had a spiritual awakening as well as these steps, we try to carry the message to alcoholics. So I went to visit most of my friends there for the next couple of months. Lost a bunch of them. None of them are in the program. Most of them died or in jail. I hit the road. If you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. And some of these we bought, we thought we'd find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from when? The very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was zot, zero, nil, until we let go absolutely. We're dealing here with alcoholism. Dealing here with alcoholism. But I'll tell you what, boys and girls, when I put a plug in the jug, my life improved so dramatically, just by being clean. Not by blacking out, not by going to jail, not by fighting guys that look like that. That I thought, what more need I have? What more is there to life than this? What more is there to life? This is just fine. And I headed off on the road, I grabbed my guitar, grabbed a harmonica player, we hit the road, started playing clubs. Huh? Yeah, let's go play clubs. They started to pay me for playing the guitar. Cause I would come to work sober. And the next day I would return. Yeah, that made me one in a million. So I began to get money for the jobs I were doing. No magic to that at all. But there was a little pit in my gut. A little pit in my gut. Right up under my ribs. And it was getting hard and it was getting hot and it was getting heavy. It's called fear. It says in this book that I wasn't reading, by the way. We are driven by 100 forms of fear. Self-seeking, self-delusion, self-pity, ... We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us. And I was driven by this fear. It was getting larger and larger and wrong. Self-seeking, self-delusion, self-pity. That's my poison. That's my poison. 5 years old, my dad taught me how to sing a song. Nobody knows the troubles I've seen. Nobody knows my sorrows. Other kids are singing, Mary Had a Little Lamb. Mom's saying, nobody knows it. It's such a bleak tomorrow. Jesus, me. I love that self-pity. One night around August, I'm sitting up in Bangor, Maine, and there's a famous guitar player that I was working with, and another famous guitar player that I was working with, and there was another famous guitar player, and there was this famous guy, and that famous guy, and these famous guys. It says in that fifth chapter of the 12 and 12, we suffer from a horrible sense of isolation. We suffer from a horrible sense of isolation. Ever been in a crowd, winos? Ever been in a crowd of friends, and you're alone? That's a sense of isolation. That ain't loneliness, baby. That's isolation. That is total isolation. And I was totally isolated. They were good and I was bad, and they were great, and they were rich and I was poor, and they were something and I was nothing. But by God, somebody had a little pile of snow on their thumb, and I thought to myself, there's one thing I can do better than any of these sons of bitches. That fast. I was loaded. Someone got a watch? Here, time this. That's a nanosecond. That's a heartbeat. That's a right now. It says in this big book that I wasn't reading, lack of power was our dilemma. Lack of power was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Obviously. Well, where are we going to find that power? That's what this book that I wasn't reading is about. It'll enable you to find a power that will solve your problem. Not your problems, your problem. What is my problem? I get loaded. Yeah, alcoholism. I get loaded. I can't not drink. And once I drink, I drink more. That's a problem. If you're a wino, that's a problem. What do I do now? My foot's tapping a little bit, you know. What do I do now? I'm loaded. What do I do now? I'm alone. What do I do now? A bottle over here. First step right there. Admit we were powerless over alcohol. I thought I'd better get my ass to a meeting. Very next day I went to an AA meeting and I walked in and I said, I got loaded. You know what they said? Come on in this house. They said, Yeah, you did. Come on in this house. Sit your ass down. Put a plug in the jug. When the basket comes around, don't put any money in. By God, don't take any money out. And they also told me something very real. They said, don't do that again. Alcoholics Anonymous is not a place for people who don't want to drink. Alcoholics Anonymous is a place for people who want to drink, but do something different. Alcoholics Anonymous is not a place for people who don't want to get loaded. It's for people who want to get loaded but do something different. They come to a meeting, so keep on coming to this meeting. Well, I thought that was a little bit harsh. So I did what I'd always done. I found a blonde that had a car. And in those days, $750 in the bank. She's a rich girl. And I told her, I said, well, honey, we're here in Maine. Let's go to Alaska. And she said, that's a great idea. The car broke down in Austin. You tell me how that happened. I've looked at a map many times. Said, there's Maine, there's Alaska, there's Austin. Let's try that again. There's Maine, there's Alaska, there's Austin. Damn! I walked into the Northland Club of Alcoholics Anonymous, looked around and resigned. You know what happened? Nobody came out to me and said hello. Nobody said, come on in this house. I walked in, I looked around, I said, I have resigned from this group. I have resigned from AA. I don't need this, they don't need me. So I resigned. After about a month after my resignation, in a fit of pique, that little blonde who had never seen me, psychotically raged, suggested that although she knew nobody in Austin, Texas, she was going to dial a phone number that had three numbers starting with 9. Now, I had a bit of a record, so I left that house running. And, hell, she had the lease and she had the car. And it was down to $400. She lost some money. I went running on down Parker Street, got to Old Tour Street, and stopped. I said, I don't know anybody in town. I don't know anywhere to go. I don't know anything to do. I haven't got a dime to my name. And I sat in this phone book, and I opened up a telephone book to A. It said Alcoholics Anonymous. It said 24-Hour Club Alcoholics Anonymous, 603 West Old Tour Street. And I looked up the street sign, and it said Old Tour Street. I looked down, it said Old Tour Street. I looked up. It said Old Tour Street. I looked down. It said Old Tour Street. So I started walking, started counting. It said 603 West Old Tour Street. I went 1, 2, 599, 6, 601, 602. When I got this little triangle with a circle, you know, the lights were open. It was the middle of the damn night, and some guy was in there playing guitar. And his name was, oh, my God, what was his name? Last name was Brown. First name was, I'll get it later. Anyway, he was playing guitar, and they had some coffee on, and we sat down, and we started again. But guess what? I'd been there before. Huh? I'd been there before. Remember that we deal with alcoholism, cunning, baffling, and powerful. I said to myself, what is it I haven't done? I thought I was reading the book. I thought I was drinking the coffee. I thought I was going to meetings. If you'd asked me, am I doing the AA deal? I'd have told you, yeah, I'm doing the AA deal, you bet. But the one thing I hadn't done is ask another man for help. Another man for help. You know the one I'm talking about, way in the back with his arms folded, looking at you. That one. There are two of them, named one Vic Thompson and Frank Roberts. Frank's still my sponsor to this day, though currently I'm hiding from him. And Vic's dead. I went to Vic Thompson. I said, will you be my sponsor? He said, no, I don't believe you can handle it. I knew he was my man. Need to have him on my side. Do you understand? Need to have him on my side. He said, pick up a big book. Read page 1. Pick up a big book. Read page 1. Well, 3 months later, things hadn't gone real well. I called him on the phone. I said, Vic, I've lost my job, I've lost my wife, I've lost my car. He said, what page are you on? I said, you're not listening. I've lost my job, I need some money. What page are you on? You're not listening. He said, what? Click. He hung up the phone. I called him several months in a row, and for several months in a row, he kept on saying, what page are you on? Ultimately, I decided he wasn't being mean. He was just asking me what page I was on. I couldn't answer his question. It dawned on me I hadn't picked up the damn book. Next time he asked me what page I was on, he said, what page should I start on? He said, page 1. So I went looking for the page 1. He said, no. He said, page 1. In the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous, there is nothing on page 1. Nor page 2. He said, that's why I gave you the assignment, son. I figured you could handle it. We embarked upon us. But you know what? I lost the job. I lost the car. I lost the woman. But you know what? So what? I was now on page 3. Yeah. By God, you know. Got some stuff going on now. He said, we got something to talk about. So I went on to page 4. And then page 5. Other books, I can do that. Page 6, Alcoholics Anonymous, no problem. The story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered. Wait a minute. I'm recovering, right? Recovered. Recovering. Recovered. Is that for me? Thank you. Recovered. I might need it in a minute. I'm going to call my sponsor here. So I called him on the phone. I said, well, wait a minute. This page 5 is a little bit difficult. It says, how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism? Is it recovering or recovered? He says, now we're talking about something. Now we got something to talk about. And we started to talk about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Started to talk about the big books of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what happened to my life? Started to change. What's that thing say? The most satisfactory times of our lives lay ahead of us, or something like that, anyway. My life began to change. Began to look at step 1. Admitted we were powerless over alcohol. I said, oh man, what's that? That's our lives had become unmanageable. He said, have you ever sat in a bar, told your wife you'd be home in an hour, took a drink, and couldn't manage to get home that week? I said, oh yeah. He said, now step 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to what? I said, sanity. He said, do you think it would be crazy for you to take a drink? I said, yes, sir, it would be crazy for me to take a drink. He said, have you ever had a compulsion to drink? I said, yes, sir, I have. He said, where did that compulsion go? The shit, I don't know. He said, that's step 2, now step 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Now I had to grapple with this. I thought that's a little bit abrupt, you know. I mean, saying the word kind of stuck in my throat. By the grace of God, believe there's a... I couldn't quite get the God word out. It was a little difficult for me. I didn't want people to think I was somehow strange. Here's a guy who lived in a gutter, worrying about what people think if I say God out loud. You know. My reputation and all. Lord, help me. We embarked upon that third step. I can remember the third step. I went through a bunch of jobs real fast. My father says, you're going to have to work. I said, I'll go play guitar. He said, no, work. So no more guitar from you. You find a job. I went through a job after job after job after job after job. He says, that's the damnedest thing I've ever heard, son. I said, but I figured out why you can't keep a job. I said, why? He says, because you have no skills. Need to learn how to do something. I said, but what is my position? He said, not a position. You get yourself a job. I ended up at a Gaddy's pizza parlor, $2.10 an hour, standing in front of a sampler pizza, so filled with fear. Because in my opinion, I was on the management track, going to own the place. Yeah. And my career was hinging on the fact that I couldn't remember the shit that went on the pizza. I sat there with a paddle and a silly-ass apron on and started crying. Because an owner like me shouldn't be in a position like this. little lady came up, she's about 14 years old, threw a bunch of crap on there, slammed it in the oven, said, manager wants to talk to you. I didn't think it was a raise. He said, you know, he's about 12 years old. He said, he looked at me, he said, well, obviously the pressure of making pizza is too great for you. And I thought, you know what the pity of that statement is? It's true. It's true. I can't make a damn pizza. So I turned my pizza making life over to God that evening. And I remember sleeping. Woke up the next day, picked up the paper, and it said, carpenters wanted. Oh, I wanted to be a carpenter. Remember that, Danny? I wanted to be a carpenter. You really were one. I want to be one so well. I want to be a carpenter. They got these hard hats. I love the way they look. So I wanted to be a carpenter real bad. I looked in the paper and said, carpenters wanted. Send resume. I don't know how many of you have ever worked on a job site, but I've never before seen anybody ask for a resume. So I called up this guy I'd worked for earlier. I said, Jesse, I need a resume. He said, well, I ain't got no resume, but I got a job. We were looking for carpenters, but you'll do. My life changed. You're talking about this, your life changed, and my life changed. It says when we took a third step, here's the how and the why. We had to quit playing God. It didn't work. It didn't work. It didn't work. I'm sitting there $2.10 an hour in front of a pizza. I can't make the damn thing. It didn't work. We had to quit playing God. You can't make a pizza. No, it says that right here. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are His agents. He is the Father. We are His children. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept, when we sincerely took a position, all sorts of remarkable, remarkable things followed. My car broke down, and I had a big job coming up on Monday as a carpenter. And I called up my sponsor. I said, my car broke down. Remember all those things you told me about not to worry about until they happen? Well, they're here. And he said a disconcerting thing to me. He said, good. I said, no. You got it wrong. This time my car is broken down. It's a Sunday. Check your watch. I have to be work on Monday, and the car won't start. He said, good. I said, no, this is not good. He said, yes, it is. Have you taken the third step in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous? Yes or no? Yes or no? Yes or no? I lied to him. I said, yes. He said, well, if you have taken the third step, if you have turned your life and your will over the care of God as you understand Him, then all things are good. Click. Called him back. I said, what do you mean all things are good? My car is broken down. He said, well, it says in here we had to quit playing God. I said, well, what is playing God? If I told you tomorrow, he said, if I told you tomorrow I knew what would happen in your life, I'd be playing God, right or wrong. I said, yes, sir, you'd be playing God. He said, how come you think you know what's going to happen tomorrow in your life? Click. All things are good. He says, you don't have to believe it, but by God, boy, you better start saying it. It's good, it's good, it's good, it's good, it's good. My car's broken down. He says, say it again. It's good. Say it again. It's good. Say it again. It's good. You may as well, as screwed up as your life is, just say it's good. Boom. Called him up again. How am I going to get to work? He said, walk. Now, I'm in Austin. The job's in Weberville. It's about 640 miles away, give or take. And I thought to myself, well, I'm going to walk. I'm going to grab that toolbox that weighs 150 pounds. I'm going to carry it on the highway and I'm going to die. And everybody's going to hate him and love me. I grabbed that toolbox. I walked out on the highway. I sat it down. The first truck to stop was the superintendent of that job. He said, come on. I never said a word to my sponsor. More and more we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully. As we became conscious of God's presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. We were reborn. We were reborn. We were reborn. Having taken the third step, he said, all the others will follow. Having taken the third step, he said, all the others will follow. Time for step 4, 5, 6, and 7. Woo! Big old job, baby. Big old job. He says, you're going to have to learn how to pray, son. You ready to learn how to pray? I said, yes, sir. He said, here's the prayer. You ready for the prayer? I said, yes, sir. He said, how's your memory? I said, well, I'm not sure. A lot of drugs, you know. He said, well, try this one. Ready? I said, yeah. He said, God help. God helps. Good, good. Those drugs didn't really damage it that much. I think we can work with this thing. So you get yourself a big chief tablet, a number 2 pencil with a big ass old eraser on it. Start writing stuff down. Say, God help me see the things that have been a problem in my life before that are still causing me a problem today. I learned about jealousy. I learned about fear. I learned about fear. I learned about fear. I learned about jealousy. I'm jealous of you. I'm jealous of you. You've got more, I've got less, I'm jealous. I learned about anger. I've used anger all my life. It's just because I'm afraid of you. Just because I'm afraid. I wrote down some stuff. I said, what is this resentment? He said, do you hate anybody? I said, oh, yeah. He said, write it down. I don't have any resentments, but God, I hate some people a lot. He said, write them down. He said, son, learn to pray for him. I said, oh, no. Yeah, God bless the son of a bitch. I can do that. So I started praying for him and writing it down. Some things came to me, but mostly I was afraid. I took the fifth step with a preacher. I hadn't seen one of them in a long time. I thought he was the Pope. He was a preacher he was an evangelistic preacher. And I went to him and he said, you got some problems with alcohol? I said, yes, sir. He said, well, come on in here. And he went to sleep. So I went through my list. You know, I said a simple prayer before I walked in there. I said, God, don't let me bullshit this guy. Well, it says that in the book. It says, it says it in there somewhere. God, don't let me bullshit this guy. I went right down that paper, man. I didn't want to get off it. I didn't want to embellish it. I said, I've done this. There were about five or six things that I'd done that there were statutes of limitations, some other things going on. And I needed to talk about it. I needed to get them out. And I said, this happened in my life. And when it was through, after a relatively short time, he looked at me and he said, is that all? Yeah. I think what he meant is, are we through? But what I heard is that all? Is you stayed drunk for all these years for that? You know, for the first time in my life, I was somewhere between a cockroach and Joan of Arc. I was right in the middle. I was right in the middle. A wonderful place to be. He looked at me and said, be careful driving. It says in here, hey, no, listen to this. If I can find this, I taped it out. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. Delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. I used to be a stutterer. I don't mean my voice, I mean my eyes. My dad would say, look him in the eye, take him by the hand. I'd look in the knee. I couldn't hold your gaze. I took that step, I can hold your gaze. My wife, we go to supermarkets. Sometimes somebody will come by, I just grab their eyes, man, I'll hold it. My wife said, quit that. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. I can be alone. I can listen to a record. I can read a book. I can go to sleep. Our fears fall from us. We don't grapple with them. We don't get them. It's not fear versus me. They fall from us. They're gone. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem is gone will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. That's strong. If you don't believe me, try it. That's strong. Be careful driving. So I said to my sponsor, I said, yeah, but I sold bad drugs to banditos. And he said, well, they deserved it. Made a list of all persons. If there's anybody from that club here, I'm awfully sorry. Yeah, just checking. Y'all have written it off anyway. I realized I owed my mother some money. $450 American. That was a lot of... No, I mean, that was a fortune to me at the time. And I got so I couldn't sleep, so I called my sponsor. I said, there's a lot of fear and anxiety in my life. I said, what's the problem? No, I said, there's a lot of fear and anxiety in my life. I said, what's the problem? A lot of fear and anxiety. What's the damn problem? I said, I owe my mother money. He said, well, pay her. Click. Well, I thought maybe I'd just think about it for a while, maybe write a letter later on down the road. And I got so I couldn't sleep, and I called him on the phone. A lot of fear and anxiety in my life. I said, what's the problem? What's your problem? I said, I can't pay my mother the money. He said, well, pay her now. I said, how am I going to pay her? He said, right off the top. My next paycheck was $450. Paid the order of mom, sent it away. Do I look like I starved? A great relief in my life. A wonderful relief in my life. We can look the world in the eye. There's a bunch of promises we all talk about around here. We'll know a new freedom and a new happiness. A new freedom and a new happiness. We all know that old happiness, that hysteria. It's a new freedom and a new happiness. We'll not regret the past. We'll just shut the door. We'll know the word serenity. We'll understand the word serenity. We'll know peace no matter how far down the ladder we have fallen. We'll see how our experience can benefit others. The feeling that drink problem has disappeared often comes strongly. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our whole attitude and outlook on life will change. Fear of people, economic insecurity disappears, gone by. It's gone. We suddenly realize that God is doing that for us, what we could never do for ourselves. Able to handle situations used to baffle us. How am I going to pay that bill? What do I say when they call? How do I answer the phone? Intuitively know how to handle situations used to baffle us. Suddenly realize that God is doing for us that which we could never do for ourselves. Like stay sober for a day. Thank you.